kicking off a little late. Thankfully, we don't have a sponsored set at 11. So what that means, I've got lipstick on my See that? I'm wearing my lipstick on my arms. Rather that than the heart, Right. Good morning. And like I said, we got some extra time, so we could definitely have the conversation in the half hour time slot that is allotted for the program. So we do apologize for the late kickoff. We are live now via our Facebook feed. For those of you who would like to get a little more personal with the conversation, you can get on our Facebook feed. Let me say welcome. Thank you so much, Dr. Meyer, for joining us this morning on She Speaks. It's an honor.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here as well.
Wonderful.
And thank you to Tammy and Jesse and Kenyatta for also helping me to step out of my comfort zone.
Oh, you're one of those. I know. No, trust me. It's a lot lighter than it seems. It's a lot less scarier than it appears. You know, we're just gonna have a beautiful conversation. Normally, when people say interview, I get nervous too. So we're gonna have a chat this morning. Just basically, we just want to get to know you. I personally just want to get to know you. I just want to know a little bit more about you. I went through the bio. You are okay. Let me just go through that. Research industrial organizational psychologist at the Institute of Health System Science in the Department of Medicine at Northwell Health. Did I get it right? I read it.
Yes.
I could have never remember it, so I had to read it off the top of the bio there. First, before we get into all of that, because you're doing quite a lot over there, you've got your foot into a lot of places, doing a lot of things that is probably affecting our normal everyday lives that we don't even know about. And I see you're also now aligned in some form way in where we are right now. The only conversation that seems to be running the world right now, the COVID conversation, you are very well placed within there as well. So we're going to touch a little on that. But before we do that, you are a St. Lucian. You were born here. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, I was born in St. Lucia. I come from a very tiny community in Lafarge-Choiseul called Sauzay. I was raised in a two-parent family household and beautifully situated between two brothers who protect me all the way throughout my life. Aww. And so I've always been sheltered and protected. My family believed a lot in education. I learned from a very young age that if I kept telling my parents that I had to study, that I would, you know, get an opportunity to no longer do housework, no longer do any kind of cooking or anything. So I used that to the best of my advantage. And I guess that's why I'm here today.
Okay.
My parents also stressed that education, as I said earlier, education will eradicate poverty. And so they drilled that into my head. They protected me. They gave me everything that I needed. As a child, people would say that I was very rude. I would like to say that's not the case. And also my mom, she really reading. She really wanted us to read. And up until a day like today, that's something that I continue to do. I continue to read. If anybody told me that I would be here today doing the work that I would be doing, then I would say, that's not the plan I had for my life. Although I did plan that I would be a doctor one day, thanks to my mom.
Right. But it was a doctor in medical field over on the medical side. That's what you were thinking. Well, you did end up a doctor. You still ended up a doctor. You just didn't understand where the doctorate was going to be coming from.
Yes, I didn't want to deal with death. I didn't want to deal with death. I didn't want to deal with blood. I didn't want to deal with any of those things.
Right.
I knew that I wanted to be a doctor of the mind because I was always fascinated by individuals' behaviors and what motivated people to act the way that they did. I wanted to know why I was so different from my two brothers at the end of the day.
Right.
Why I was the way that I was. So it was only natural that I went into that field.
What were some of the defining things as a child that made you realize I'm different?
I was very quiet. And when I first came to America, I used to tell people that I was shy because growing up, that's what I was told. I was told that I was shy. And then somebody told me, no, you're not shy. You're very reserved. And so also doing psychology, I started to learn about introversion. Like my mother told me, she couldn't take me anywhere as a child because I would be someplace 5 minutes and I'd start crying that I wanted to go home. And up to a day like today, I'm still very much that person. I will not leave my house if I do not know what time I'm coming back so that I could say that I have 2 hours of energy that I could dedicate to people. And that has allowed me to have a balance mm-hmm. in my life and also been very inquisitive. I've used right. my introversion and my inquisitiveness to really drive my research. My dissertation was about myself because I had so many struggles right. when I was doing the dissertation process. So it was only natural that I do a dissertation on myself.
Wow. I don't understand that word, but what's a dissertation? What's that?
So the dissertation is after you've done like all your classes in the PhD program, mm-hmm. then you have to do your area of research that you can become an expert in.
Okay.
And so you have, whether that be 2 years to do that research, 3 years to do that research, 5 years to do that research. Mm-hmm. I was so tired of going to school that I did it in 1 year. Oh. Because I was just like, I needed to get out.
Okay.
Make the sacrifice. I didn't go home. I didn't see my parents for a while, all because I wanted to do the dissertation. I did my dissertation on immigrants. And at that time, Donald Trump was elected. Ooh. So it was very, very stressful to get immigrants to come out of the spotlight and sort of say, hey, I am extremely stressed. This situation is very, very stressful for me.
Right.
And it's affecting my mental health.
Right.
And that's when I had to tap into my own personal network to ask people to help me to fill out my forms, take my surveys, and help me to just write this dissertation. It is a very tiring, long, lonely process. I cried a lot. It was just very stressful, but here I am.
Oh my God. Okay, so whatever you had to go through to be what you are today was a very lonely road.
It was a very lonely road.
Lonely even for an introvert like yourself, who never really wanted to be around people anyways.
Yes, it's very interesting, but yes, it was very lonely because I think I needed to see people who had done it before me.
Right. You needed an inspiration.
I was one of the first persons in my cohort who was going through it. A lot of people couldn't understand. I had so many restrictions as an international student that it exacerbated whatever stress or struggles that I was going on. And that's the key part, that being an international student, I didn't have as much freedoms as my other cohort members had. I was on a strict deadline. Like, I didn't want, if I continued classes in the 1 year after, I would have to pay money. And mm-hmm. I didn't want to have to deal with that because my scholarship money would have been done. So while my cohort members could have continued and take their very precious time,
You didn't have that luxury. Oh. But do you think that because of your nature as well, that introvertness that you carry sort of made it a little more difficult and too for you to reach out, because that would have mean that you would have hesitated reaching out to people, like more other people would have reached out and say, okay, I need help. I want some help. I need some assistance over here. Do you think that would have hindered you somewhat as well?
Yes. And so that helped me step out of my comfort zone because I had to ask people for help. That's not something that I was very used to. As I said earlier, all my life, my parents mm-hmm. were the one who provided for me. And then I got to America and it was like my parents no longer had that restriction. I also lived with my uncle for a while and he provided me with some sort of comfort and safety. But during the dissertation process, I had to actually step out to ask people in the field for help.
For help.
And that was
uncomfortable. But now that you had to do it, even as you know, you're achieving, yes. But even at some point in time, having that sort of personality, you had to make adjustments in that field. So what would you say? Somebody who was very much introverted, yeah? You actually had to step out of that zone. So how would you advise people who are now probably like you used to be? At some point in time, you're going to have to make a decision to step out of the comfort zone, right? If you want to get or you want to achieve. Do you hold that perception now?
Yes. So I'm still very much an introvert after I cleared out my schedule for the morning. So after I'm done with you, I could recharge.
Right.
But I would advise anybody to take it baby steps at a time.
Right.
So I started first with the first stepping out of my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. We have an advisor throughout the dissertation process. I had to get comfortable with asking her for help. Right. I had to get comfortable with telling her that I was struggling. I did things out of my comfort zone. I also had to step out of my comfort zone. And that's where my friends and my family came in. Right. I remember there was a point in time my parents didn't want to pick up the phone because they knew that if they saw my number, I would be crying and saying, aww, I cannot do this, I cannot do this. Aww. But then I had my mother would tell me, listen here, child, snap out of it and do what you have to do. You are my child.
Right.
You have to do. My father would just give me that eye. I know growing up, my father had this eye that he always used to give us. Once I saw that, I was just like, okay, girl, you need to get it together and do what you have to do.
Wow. Balance is important, isn't it?
Balance is definitely important.
We're going to come back and talk about some of the things that you're actually now involved in. You do a lot of work across the world, rather, and you have a very high concentration in certain groups. You know, racial, ethnic minority groups. We want to come back and talk about your work along that line and why that field, why that. I mean, of course, you're coming for the Caribbean, and that might be one of the influence, but I'm interested in more. So let's take a word again from the partners and then we will come right back.
If you're ready to own your own home, then it's time for us to meet. At Bank of St. Lucia, we believe in you. We believe that life is sweet. A mortgage that fits your life with amenities that can't be beat. BOSL Home Sweet Home. Now that's where life is sweet. A wise retirement. EduStart 2. No other bank will give all that to you. Convenience banking. Bank anywhere. No other bank can compare. BOSL Home Sweet Home. An all-in-one package, nice and neat. BOSL Home Sweet Home. Yes! Life is sweet. I know you're telling me.
When you're behind the wheel, stay alert. Driving safely should always be your top priority. Protect yourself and other road users by keeping your attention on the road. Stay alive, avoid distractions like cell phones, and maintain a safe distance from other vehicles. Only overtake when it is absolutely safe to do so. And remember to be on the lookout for motorcyclists. The life you save today may be yours. Alert today, alive tomorrow. This message is brought to you by AKT Motorcycles, available at Courts.
Problem skin should not be a problem. Melanopeel's medical grade cosmeceutical and acneceutical skincare effectively clears discolorations, melasma, and acne. Visit us to learn more.
Clear skin is possible with Melanopeel.
Get it exclusively in St. Lucia at the Dermalogics Medical Laser and Facial Aesthetic Clinic, located in Rodney Bay at the Providence Medical Center on the same floor as Lusolac.
Wonderful. And we are back in case you're late and you're just joining us. We've got the wonderful St. Lucian, dot of the soil, Dr. Meyer Williams. She's in our company this morning. And of course, she's in the field of psychology. I'm right. Psychology, but really extensive and at policy and decision making levels as well, where you actually influence when you study and you get your patterns, you actually influence some policy makers. Right. So let's talk now about some of the things that you're involved in. There's quite a lot. I don't even know where to start. So I'm going to leave it up to you to walk us through your journey and some of the things that you're involved in right now. And then we're going to talk about, you know, how is it? What is it doing? What's that one for? And then I want to spend some time on the COVID one because you're also an IO psychologist. You're involved in the, let me see, COVID-19 something going on. So you're going to break that all down for us, simplify it for us, who are tuned in right now. So tell us some of the things, some of the places that you've worked and the role that you've played and how critical was those role in terms of what you had to do.
Okay. So the first thing is when I was done with A-level, probably 2020, sorry, in the year 2002, right, I couldn't get a job even though I had very good grades.
Right.
And so I knew I wanted to look at business because I wanted to follow my mother, my grandmother, my aunt's path, all of who are entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And I also wanted to study psychology. So I needed a way to marry the two. And okay. That's when I found out about industrial and organizational psychology. Initially, I started as an air traffic control officer, and I realized that I liked the systems and the processes, always looking for ways to improve the systems and the processes. Right. And I had some very good conversations with my supervisor, Amy Charles, at the time, and she was always encouraging me to go and pursue my dreams. Mm-hmm. And so after I did Monroe College in St. Lucia, and then I moved to the United States in 2011, I want to say, to do industrial and organizational psychology. And after that, I went into the PhD program. Uh-huh. And after finishing the PhD program, or in fact, while in the PhD program, in our final year, we have what is known as an internship course. And that internship course will determine whether we want to go into research, government, practicing psychology. And so I decided at the time that I was interested in research. I wanted to put my hands in the research field.
Right.
So Hofstra University is partnered with Northwell Health. And so I was able to do my internship there. Right. And I remember learning a little bit more about research and the work that I did. But I also realized that I started to experience some severe racism. It was something that I was shielded from when I was in.
Right.
I was in Brooklyn, and then I moved to Long Island, or a predominantly white institution, and it started feeling like I was the other. Like I became the only one, the only woman, the only person of color.
Yeah.
And it dawned on me that people were not looking at me as an Afro-Caribbean person. They were just looking at me as black. They just saw the color of skin. And whenever I started speaking, they realized that I had an accent. So even being in school, it was like, oh, you took one of our positions. They said that I only came in here because of affirmative action. They said that I wasn't smart, I wasn't bright.
Whoa, girl. Why you didn't call us to come fight them for you? Because you didn't have to deal with them. especially you trying to get into that field. To them, that was reserved for us.
Yes, and my field is about, I want to say, 98% white. So it was very interesting to see a black woman, especially a black immigrant woman.
Yes.
And I had one professor who told me, anything that people are discouraging me against, that's my superpower. My intersectionality is my superpower.
Right.
So use as much as I can the fact that I'm black, I'm woman, and I'm immigrant. Always use it to my advantage. And so I started using that to my advantage.
Oh, yes.
And even when I graduated, and my manager, she kept me because of the work that I was doing. I remember when I was done with my internship, I was like, all right, I'm not coming back to work on Monday, please. And she was like, no, you need to come back to work on Monday because we need you.
Oh.
And so I created a unique skill set for myself, especially now with COVID-19. There are like 2,000 industrial and organizational psychologists in America right now.
Right.
And so the skill sets that I have is so unique that they needed that skill set. They needed the research that I was doing.
Let them deal with it. Let them deal with it. They're going to have to deal with it.
Let them deal with it. So I remember, being an intern. So even after I graduated with my PhD, people still called me the intern. And so I had to establish myself as, I am no longer the intern. I am Dr. Maya.
That's right. Now something makes sense. You want to know what makes sense now? I go try a little joke on you. We did the name when we did the card, and we did just Maya Williams. And now I understand it. And you are right, as you should. That's right. Dr. Maya Williams. I love it. Yes. Now we understand, baby. I was like, is she too much? What's all that? Now I'm understanding.
When I left school, I initially was like, oh, it's fine. Like, I'm fine with people calling me Maya. But then my mentors, especially my black women mentors, they were like, no, girl.
People
disrespect us enough already. Like, that's how you could establish your footprint. That's right. Make sure wherever you go, people put respect on your name.
Especially them that had issues in the first instance.
Exactly. And even sometimes, even when I don't do it for myself, like my younger brother would be like, no, we're not about that life. You need to tell them, put respect on your name.
One of my listeners that's normally a regular here, she says, yeah, doctor, yes, put some respect on a name, like Marie normally says. I normally say that. So you're right. Put some respect on the name. Dr. Maya. Get it right.
And it became a situation where before I was, when I was the intern, like I was saying, like having a PhD or being mm-hmm. called doctor was such an amazing thing. And then all of a sudden I got it and people were saying like, oh, it's nothing. And so I used to be the lead researcher on a number of projects, walk into rooms and people would never look at me. They would just say, like, they would turn to the white woman and be like, oh, she's the lead on the project. And I was like, no, I am Dr. Maya Williams. Because a lot of people right. tend to say that I look white on paper. And so I had to sort of establish myself.
Okay, so when they look at the specs, they just automatically aligned it to a person of a white person. And then you show up.
And then I show up.
Has
and
I also Dr. like Meyer.
To say that I
like this. That's right. That is important as well. Yes. Well, that's that in itself is a lot of inspiration because, you know, sometimes we move around in these parts and we don't really, because we don't have to deal with it so heavily, we tend to sort of gloss over the fact that racism very much still exists. And look, you had to endure this kind of thing. And this seems like so foreign to us here, but you actually went through that. So now we understand why some of our black, sometimes as coming from the Caribbean, when persons like yourself, we interact with you, not knowing what it is that you, the course that you have charted and how, you know, might even influence how you react to people. And then we might read it wrongly, you know, but not understanding that this is coming from a background of having to fight to prove, you know, so this is where it's coming from. And sometimes sometimes you just need to stop for a moment and understand each other. And now I'm getting that. And then you went on to do so much more. I watching this thing, I'm self-confused. I probably would have watched it and think it's white too, you know. That's just a little joke. But, you know, because there's quite a lot going on there. And it shows that it can be done and it can be achieved whether or not you're coming from a little village in the back of Chauzel, down there in a little island called St. Lucia in the Caribbean. It is doable. It is achievable. Yes. And you're a living example of that. Now, let's talk about the COVID thing. I want to spend some time because this is what is consuming us all across the world. We can't skip over it. I think we are all still trying to grapple to find some sort of common ground where this is concerned, from the battle of to take the vaccine or not to take it, to whether it's man-made or whether it's a real thing or whether it was done for certain, you know the conversation because you're right there in the middle of it all. What are you what is your role in there? Because you are doing some work. What are you studying really? You're studying how COVID is affecting us as human beings. The effects it is having on us, and psychological effects it's having on us, the entire process right now, because a lot of people are stressed out. That's one. Yeah. People are angry. Some people are angry because the people who hold certain views about it is like, oh gosh, no, it's them people that do that thing. They want to kill Bill Gates. So you are now in a position where you are studying that. Walk us through what it is that you're really is trying to achieve and what is the process like? I'm not sure if you could tell us everything, but, you know, at least give us some little insight so we can get a little enlightenment because we need it.
Yeah, so my research or the work that I do is in three buckets. Mm-hmm. So the first one is, as most of you guys might know, that there are serious health disparities in America. Mm-hmm. And these health disparities is because of racism. Right. And so going to the doctor, black people or black and brown people don't always get sufficient help in terms of their healthcare or have access to healthcare. And they do because of history. They have this sort of like fear of the health, well, not fear, but mistrust of the health system that's very warranted. And so black people would not necessarily, as we could see at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, they didn't really believe or trust the health system. And so there were so many, I remember at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, like we were just like, oh, this is a white person disease. This has absolutely nothing to do with us.
Right.
So even while I was doing the research or crunching the numbers for COVID-19, which was my responsibility at the time, I was noticing that the numbers are being deflated and there was not much of a recognition of race. And so I remember going to my manager and saying like, hey, I'm crunching the figures, I'm running the figures, but it showed me that white people are most disproportionately affected by COVID-19. And from the research that I do, the research that we do, we both know that this is not correct.
Right.
And so I was being told like, why do we have to bring race into it? It's COVID, it's affecting everybody. But I was like, no. The stories that I was hearing from the black males in my life was that they were going to the doctor. They were saying that they had some sort of symptoms of COVID-19, they were being turned back, but yet still 3 days later, returning to the ER, it was just like now they had full-blown COVID. The first person that I knew with COVID-19 was actually a healthy man who ended up on a ventilator.
Wow.
And so even going into the rooms and saying, like, we need to focus on the racial data, we need to focus on the racial data so that we can bring interventions, people were saying, like, no. And so I created my own intervention.
Right.
And that was being like, okay, this is this woman. She had balls.
Yes.
Because everybody was saying, like, no, you shouldn't do that. But I created my own intervention. And because of the research that I do, knowing that if you're tagged with a Black woman is tagged with a Black female doctor, or a Black man is tagged with a male doctor, then his chances of taking or having prostate, like going through the treatments for prostate cancer, is actually reduced. And so I created this intervention that had like audience panelists concordance, so that is everybody on my panel had to be Black, because we were reaching out to the Black community.
Right.
And so the individuals who initially thought that this intervention was not going to work started seeing that we were reaching like 10,000 people.
Right.
And so my intervention started being used throughout our entire health system to get more Black people to take the vaccine, to get more Black people to come to the hospitals, to get more immigrants to come out of the shadows and be like, hey, I am here for my COVID-19 vaccine. I'm here to get tested.
Right.
And then the other part of this is that because my work also focuses on employees, then I have to look at how COVID-19 affects employees. So on a given, on a daily basis, I have to sit down with frontline staff members, whatever it is that they went through.
They went
needed to go to therapy for that, because there was so much
went
through, listening to their stories, and then try to develop an intervention that would reduce their stress and PTSD.
Wow.
And even now,
girl, you got some heavy things on your hands, man.
I have some heavy things. This is why balance is so important.
Wow.
And even now, like yesterday, I was in a meeting and I had to listen to nurses and doctors saying, like, doc, this is coming back. We're having a third wave. I am stressed out. And so it's now, how do I get my employees no longer stressed out? What can I do to ensure that, you know, these people are able to go through the third, fourth, fifth wave of COVID-19 that we're actually about to face because of the holidays that we just had, and because of the Omicron variant
Oh gosh. No, listen, and I want to ask you, so what it is you do? Let's talk to you now. So now we get a little insight as to what it is you're handling. And it's a lot. This is heavy stuff. Now, you being a psychologist also do know that these things are, you know, these energies latch on to people. You have to be there dealing with all of that. And this is 20,000 different people's problems being brought to you. So what do you do? How do you deal with it? How do you unload? How do you offload? Because you have to in it.
I have to.
You have to get therapy. You got to go to therapists yourself?
Yes, I do have to go to therapy myself to ensure that I unload it. And I guess as, you know, dealing with everybody's problems, I know not to take on the
right
problems.
Okay, so do you have that set skill? Do you have that where you are able to receive it, but you got to block? Like, you know how to block it from getting into the system of yourself?
Yes, I know how to separate my life, my personal life from my work life. So,
is that something you can learn to do, or you got to be born with that skill?
You can learn to do it.
You just have to
put various checks and balances in place.
Okay.
So I have people that I call.
Mm-hmm.
And then after I'm stressed, I call and I just talk to them. On Fridays, I just watch Netflix. I travel. Although I can travel right now, but I travel. I separate work. Like when I'm out of work, I'm out
boundaries, of work. You got to set some very strict boundaries and keep to it.
Strict boundaries.
Because so if you're set, I normally do that as well. On the weekend, I say I don't deal with nothing work related because this is for family or you know, private time. And you have to be a diamond because people will be at you. People will send you stuff. Somebody wants an interview. Somebody that, you know, you got to be. Does it, because sometimes I get people thinking that I'm just being. snobby yes. show. I'm just being, yeah. Yes. But, you know, so I'm glad you're here. So speak to that and how important it is, because doing the work that you do, I'm sort of like what we do as well, because we got to come here and make people happy every day, regardless of what's going on in our lives. You know, I just bawled down here this morning already. Nobody, I see that I come, hi, and I'm here, you know, and a bright-eyed bushy tail, and I'm here, and my DJ saw me bawled down in here, you know, because I had a concern, and, you know, I couldn't get certain things sorted out. And it's important for people now who don't understand it from that standpoint to get an insight or to get an understanding of it. So speak to that for people who are listening. God, I want you on my program for a whole day. We need to really talk. You see, we need a person like you. We need about 2 hours just us sitting here discussing this. Because you see what? People don't have the access, or people don't know where to go when they have those sudden little things. They might be grasping from here and understand that they are actually experiencing these things. And you can just be giving them a little insight as to how to. You could probably be saving somebody's life just now by being there on that program. Because certain little things, and sometimes the normal mind, we're on our way and we don't bother to stop to think, to wonder what's going on with somebody. But you know, you now being there, you know, and I mean, who best? After dealing with so much people from so much different background, with so much to offload, and you get to have to deal with it, I mean, you're very well placed to do that. So speak to that. How important it is to set those boundaries and to have people to understand these boundaries are necessary for you to have. And they themselves should have some boundaries as well. And that, you know what, they shouldn't take it personal when people are, you know, sticking to their boundaries.
And that's the most important thing, that people should not take it personal. People have to do. I think as women, as people from the Caribbean, we're always told to put other people first. And if we put ourselves first, then putting ourselves first is selfish.
Yeah.
And throughout my entire life, I've been heard told that I am selfish. But that selfishness has actually saved me, especially my mental health. It has prevented me from being driven crazy. Mm-hmm. It has helped me to set boundaries and establish boundaries. And I believe that setting the boundaries at first will be very difficult because people have access to you. So all of a sudden, when you're just like, oh, I do not want you to come at my home.
Oh, you're a doctor now. Yeah, now you get, oh, you're a doctor now.
Yes. But it's like, no, you tell people that you grant people grace, and you, as if you want people to respect your boundaries, you have to respect their boundaries as well. So I have my boundaries. So I have this Uncle Jason, that I will just call and say, what's up, Uncle Jason? And I would not ask, how are you? I will not ask, what's your day like? But he knows that his responsibility in my life mm-hmm. is that I am this person that he could always count, that I am this person that he's this person that I can always count on. But then when Uncle Jason started implementing boundaries, I was like, hold up. But knowing now that I have to respect his boundaries if I want my boundaries to be respected. And that's mm-hmm. very much important.
Absolutely.
And like my parents always told me, health is wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And so knowing what I know about stress and how stress, if you are stressed, even though you think that you are not stressed, you'll start to notice stress coming in the way that you eat. You'll start to notice stress in the way that you sleep. You'll start to notice stress in the way that you interact with people. Your body will start shutting down first. So listen to your body. And it could be something as simple as having 8 hours of sleep. It could be something as simple as sitting on the couch and watching your favorite TV.
Yeah.
I know there's buzzword now, self-care. I mean, St. Lucia has the beach. It could be simple as going to the beach.
Mm-hmm.
Nature also helps people feel better.
Yeah.
You know, listening to music helps people feel better. Mm-hmm. Finding somebody that you could talk to helps people feel better. Journaling helps people feel better. All these little things that you could implement just at the end of the day. If you could say, I have 5 minutes to myself. I know some women tell me that when they get to their driveway, they shut down their car, they sit in their car because that's the only time that they have to themselves. So try and see if you could find self. The lockdown Sundays was time for self, to turn it into self-care Sundays. That was a way to look at it.
Absolutely. I took full advantage, girl. I'm still all now taking advantage. Lockdown it is. Lockdown it is. Solace is important. And we have been also, lately, what we see, again, another psychological thing, because social media, we have so many influences around us that is directing us where it may, and that we are losing focus of ourselves. With everything happening around, solace seems to be something that people are now, a lot of us, you know, a lot of us, especially us ladies, and I see you mention ladies a lot because you like to see elevation and put effort into that as well. Us ladies, we tend to think that solace, we always feel we have to put it up front out there. That's it. We always in somebody. Like, people are scared to let people know, okay, I'm having a moment by myself. Like, people are scared to think that that is a normal thing. For you to do that, it is not considered normal. And I like doing that. I don't always have to be up on the, even if I'm dating somebody, or, you know, I think it's important for me to have that me time. There's a day I might want to go to the beach just by myself, and it doesn't mean I'm a single woman. It means I just want to be there alone. And people tend to feel this added burden that they feel it's something wrong. And it's the only time you're supposed to show or represent solace is when you break up, or you're not in a relationship, or you don't have family checking for you. Or, you know, solace is beautiful and it's important for you to spend time with yourself.
Yes.
Girl, we need you here. You see, when you're there in the U.S., they're doing this thing. Say, you need to come home and put something in place. Here. I don't mind. I go channel it along. I will definitely channel it along for you. But just come and put some, set up something here so I can, you know, because I think we do need it.
That's actually a goal of mine, actually.
Right. I was about to ask you that. The work that you're doing now is over there in the U.S. And it's, you know, especially with this COVID thing, you're doing quite a lot. And it's well-placed as well because, like you said, the environment over there, they need that kind of research. But have you been looking indoor in the Caribbean? What do you think, as far as, I don't know if you had the time, because that's quite a lot on your plate there. So I don't know if you've had the time or you found some time to look into the Caribbean and how it is that this COVID thing now is, you know, can the same thing be done? Are we experiencing the same sort of thing here in the Caribbean, or is our challenges with COVID different here in the Caribbean, or is it something that could probably, that template that you're using over there, is it something that could manifest over here? Is there a need for something like it here? Have you gone that far in your research? I'm sorry.
Yes, I have. So okay. Actually, when COVID-19 just started, and I believe at the time St. Lucia was doing well, mm-hmm. but what I saw was working was that the CMO, every single day, this lady was on the television updating people. And so when I noticed that, and we were dealing with COVID so well, I went to my manager and I was like, you know, we have this model in St. Lucia that appears to be working. And I think that's how we could craft our intervention around that model, like to constantly keep people up to date. And right. So I used that model. And one of the things that I had to discuss in therapy, which was really, really bad for me, was that I was doing so much work in America about COVID-19 while my country was struggling.
Yeah.
And that did not sit well with me at all. And so I reached out to the Ministry of Health and I was like, hey, I can help you. I could support you. But they had so much going on right now that I don't think that they understand like what it was, the way in which I could have supported them, because I had access to so many resources. I had access to so many people who could actually be a voice and say like, hey, explain. I mean, the CMO was doing a wonderful job.
But she's overloaded as well at the time, because remember, she's got everything else. And for you having to have everything else and have to hurt your head about and still have to come on the... And I didn't envy her at all. I thought, boy, we didn't do her nice at all. I thought, you know, we could have sent the lady off. That wasn't nice at all, you know? Right. So, but you see, that's another thing again. And another thing with us, you know, Lord, let me don't go there. We are going there because you see, let's keep it surrounding you. And because you see, sometimes you just want to go certain places. Like, you know, now I tell you, I need a whole day with you, you know, sweetheart. It's already 18 after 11 o'clock though. There is also an award that you received, and was it when 2020 you received an award for a training, a researcher, what was it, researcher in training award and educational advancement from, what's that, advancing women in science and medicine. That's a body from over on the U.S. it's an international recognized body, of course.
Yes. So at the time I was like a researcher in training. I was being mentored. Okay. And then eventually I no longer had to be mentored. I now have to mentor people.
Right.
And so a lot of my work was around like immigrants, because immigrants have their whole, like, I could talk to you all day
about it. I realize you're very heavy there on that.
Struggle.
Yes. Yeah. And I would understand why you feel strongly about that group as well, because you were part of that group and you experienced firsthand what it is that they could face when they're looking down. If they're not as strong as you, boy, a lot of people could fall off the, the crack, you know, and definitely.
And I also tell people I was legal and I had those struggles.
So imagine those that are not. Yeah.
Imagine the individuals who are not legal, how much more exacerbated that distress is.
Yes. Yes. Wow. So you spend a lot of time doing that. What is your ultimate goal, though, with the work that you're doing now? What do you hope to achieve? What do you hope to? When is this going to come and say, all right, I am definitely doing what I believe I. Apart from, I mean, I'm sure you experienced some of that already on the way, but you must have some bigger goal in terms of what you hope, because especially with the groups, the ethnic groups that the immigrants that you're working with, what would be some of the times when you're going to sit back and say, yes.
I think when I come back to St. Lucia.
Okay, that's heavy on you.
I beg your pardon?
That's heavy on you. You really want to come home and do work here.
Yes, I really want to study St. Lucians. I really want to put interventions to improve our work ethic. I believe we do have some strong work ethics,
yes.
But I do want to improve productivity a little bit more.
Right.
St. Lucia has the third highest rate of women managers, and I want to tap into that,
right,
because I think that there's a lot of research that could be done in that area. Another thing that I want to do is in the area of mentorship, which is why I created my Mindset Lisi. I want to show people that you could be more than a police officer, a lawyer, a doctor, which is what they teach us in the Caribbean,
yes,
that you could be.
Yes,
but
yes.
I always tell people that there are so many layers to being a doctor, that you could mix your passion with your job. You could do whatever it is that you want to do. You could create whatever job it is that you want, which is something that I was able to do for myself. And so I want people to be able to see that, because even when I teach students, I have students say that I just needed one person. And that one person was you. I have a lot of Black young women telling me, I didn't think it was possible that Black women could have PhDs, especially in the STEM field, and be successful. So if I could do that for St. Lucian young ladies, then that would be my ultimate goal. My other ultimate goal, my father is retired, but I'd like to retire my mom. Aww. I'd like to have my parents travel the world.
The world.
My parents on my travels. And
yes.
Also, I guess take care of my brothers, although they could handle themselves.
Aww.
But that as well, I want to also give back to my family. And that's an ultimate goal of mine. Also, if I could leave my mark, like sort of like change the immigration laws in America,
right.
I mean, that's a heavy, heavy, heavy load. Uh-huh. And it, I might
You've taken on a lot. You've taken on a lot. I have confidence that you could take on and challenge that one and be successful as well. I believe it.
Yes.
All right. That's a benchmark there for you.
Thank you.
Wow. You're amazing. You are absolutely amazing. And I think, you know, your final few points were definitely... It was very much what I wanted to end on, you know, that sort of inspiration. But if there's anything else with any of my listeners, quite a number of them are listening and viewing and commenting via our feed. So if there's anything you'd like to leave with any of the listeners right now, what would be that final thing you'd say to anybody listening right now along the lines of inspiration?
I just want to say thank you to all the people who have supported me throughout my entire journey, all the St. Lucian people. My mom told me that everybody came into her shop and they're listening to me and they're very proud.
Oh, my God. Hi, everybody in Dong Shosel. All you put something there for my coming Dong Shosel for the holidays. Go give me direction, darling. You go give me direction, yeah? I go in my mommy's shop in your absence. I go in. Well, yeah, she sent me. Wonderful. Continue.
I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And then I just want to tell people that be comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had to step out of my comfort zone. I know in this day and age, and I tell my nieces and my nephews that all the time, we live in a microwave generation that's not really a microwave generation.
Mm-hmm.
Success takes time. Success doesn't happen overnight. You will fall, you will stumble, but you have to continuously keep getting back up, because that's what success is. If I thought success was a straight line, if success only was a straight line, there's so many disappointment curves that you have to get over. It's just obstacle is the way.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing which it took me so long to learn that, but be comfortable with failure.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy failing. Fail early, fail quick, and fail a lot. And that's
yes.
the only way that you will learn.
Absolutely.
And of course, have your social support network. I couldn't be where I am without my family. I couldn't be where I am without the people that supported me. I couldn't be where I am without my nieces and my nephews inspiring me to be a better... It's like my parents gave me a baton And they gave me that baton so that I could increase generational wealth and that I could continue to carry on a tradition for them. And now I'm going to hand over the baton to my nieces and my nephews so that they could do the business.
Absolutely.
And I think I'll make them well.
Girl, Myra, you're a boss. That's the only how I can put it there this morning. But thank you very much. And I'm sure you're an inspiration to many. Like you said, it was not an easy road, but you took it on, and it shows that it's possible to be done, and it can be done. And whether or not it's places where they don't think we belong, if God says yes, who say no?
It's yes.
Who say no? Exactly. Beautiful, all the best. They don't give me, listen, I get direction to the shop. You late, I don't need direction again. I'll be headed to Chazelle over the holidays, but thank you so much. We appreciate you. Keep on doing what you're doing, and we really do hope that, you know, I think you would be an asset to back home as well, but you got to do what you got to do over there now, because the more you do over there and the more established you become, the more of value you're going to be to your country when you do come back.
That's
so
right.
we do appreciate it, and we look forward to that day when you're back on that soil and you can make some very strategic contribution towards the development of your land.
Thank you. And if people see my surveys out, please take my surveys while I'm doing my research.
Girl, yes. Send the thing. We're going to make sure they get it done. Absolutely. Enjoy it. All right. Have a great, great one. Happy holidays. Wonderful. Absolutely.
Bye.
So there you go, guys. Oh, she's amazing, isn't it? Wow. You see, that is your people. Lucia, that is all your people there doing their take it up. Come to y'all, man. Lucia, that is all your people there doing their take it up. Only take us joke. All right, so this is something, this should inspire somebody this morning. We did go a little over time because we did start off late. We were having some issues this morning with our connectivity, so we do apologize again, but I'm sure you didn't mind. I didn't mind at all. I think we needed that kind of conversation this morning, and thank you again to the Bank of St. Lucia. Thank you to Quartz, and thank you to Dermalogix. Thank you to you, the viewers and the listeners. Thank you to Tammy and the team. No, that is your final speech. That is your final speech, because next week we're going to be having She Speak. But it's going to be something more like a synopsis and a follow-up on the Miss World. So we're looking forward to that. Tyler is going to be joining us. But so basically, this does look like it is the final one for the year. And what a beautiful year it was. With everything, despite everything that was going on, we were able to keep this this program running thanks to our partners, the Bank of St. Lucia. Oh, God. How are we saying thank you? We can't even say thank you enough. Quartz, thank you again for coming on board, seeing the vision, and coming on board Dermalogix Clinic. Thank you so much. And Dermalogix is also on board with our Miss World representative as well. Dermalogix has got all the talking to me nice. Oh, what skin? Let me tell you about... Hello? All the talking to me nice. Oh, listen, this morning... Don't play with me. This is all Dermalogix. You see this? This beautiful silhouette right here in terms of skin and taking care of your skin on the medical grade level. You don't have to do this thing on alone. You know, you listen, your skin go through a lot, you know, especially coming from the Caribbean. So you need to make sure that you give your skin back the love that it deserves for all that is, you know, you put it through. All right. So Dermalogix is a place. We want to say thank you to you guys so much. Tammy and Roy and the team, you know, the productivity team, the guys, you know, they've been working really hard, you know, getting the guests, you know, getting the people on, you know, seeking the people, getting them here for 1 year full. I'm giving the final speech earlier. Right. So I want to say thank you so much. And it was an honor to just, you know, be the instrument that sits here to bring it all together. And I must say, I am totally honored. And I can only look forward to, if God says so, I can only look forward to next year and more for on the She Speaks level. Guys, you are amazing. You made it what it was. And we thank you so very, very much. A word from our brave, bold, and absolutely respectable sponsors. Thank you. See you again next year. Make sure you come back on board. We're doing this again next year. This is important.